the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Could blockchain technology live up to its promises and solve many of Africa's most pressing financial problems, such as payments and remittances? A new African blockchain report by CVVC in collaboration with Standard Bank suggests blockchain technology could accelerate Africa's economic development in many practical ways. For example, slashing the costs of cross-border remittances, which in some countries accounts for a good portion of their GDPs. In the Gambia, for example, remittances account for more than 20% of its GDP. Then imagine what could happen if stable coins backed by real-world assets such as the US dollar could be used as a means of trade payment. They're being used as we speak, completely unregulated, and that will change in the coming years as countries realize they do need to regulate this space to maintain any kind of national sovereignty. The blockchain is already being piloted as a means of verifying and hosting personal ID. Imagine no longer having to fill out forms, multiple forms, when applying for loans or government services. All your information may be safely embedded on a blockchain in one single file, and that would be unhackable and proofed. All of that information will be contained in a single file, safely embedded on the blockchain that is unhackable. This report contains a dizzying amount of insights on a country-by-country basis for the continent as a whole. CVVC is a Swiss-based blockchain investor and international startup ecosystem builder. And what a surprise to find Standard Bank leading from the front in understanding and developing these new technologies. To discuss this, we're joined by Brenton Nyker, Director of Capital Formation and Accelerator at CVVC Africa, and Ian Putter, Head of Blockchain for Africa at Standard Bank. Welcome to both of you, Brenton and Ian. Thanks for coming on.
Well, Kieran, it's always a pleasure to be here. As I think the audience knows, I've been on the MoneyWeb Crypto podcast before, but this time I'll be wearing an interesting new hat.
Yes, people will remember you as Africa lead for Binance, and now you're with CVVC. So we'll get into that in a minute. And also welcome Ian Putter from Standard Bank.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Brenton, let's start with you. What are some of the standout findings from this report, the African blockchain report that you've just published? It's just come out today.
Brilliant. So I think, like you said, there's an absolute treasure trove of really interesting information. And that was one of the key reasons we opted to develop this report, because there wasn't really a comprehensive set of data points for people to really take a look at Africa from a bird's eye view and understand what that blockchain ecosystem and particularly the startup side of it looks like. And what really, really jumped out at me, you know, when we were preparing this report, and kudos to my amazing team, is, you know, all of the headlines have been covering African funding in general. You know, we've seen massive traditional VC rounds being funded in Africa, and rightly so, right? The traditional VC market in Africa has grown by about 149% over the last year, so between 2020 and 2021. But if you look at the growth in blockchain funding of startups, and particularly between the first quarter of 2021 and what we've just wrapped up now of the first quarter of 2022, it actually grew over that period by 1,668%. So, you know, for it to be outpacing African VC funding by something like 11 times, you know, was really, really surprising. I mean, we knew it was big, but not that big. And in spite of that, we still haven't seen Africa's first blockchain unicorn. So I think those two things together were very exciting for the future of blockchain in Africa. And then another thing that jumped out is I think the regulatory landscape, which I think we'll cover a little bit later, But actually, you know, there isn't really a good regulatory landscape across most of the 54 countries in Africa. And while many people may see this as a negative, it just means there's so much opportunity for more capital and more solutions to basically flow into the space. So two biggest takeaways, I think, was still a lot of room for regulatory maturity, and the pace that blockchain venture funding is growing in Africa is absolutely astounding.
Right. And of course, a unicorn, I had to look that up. I didn't know. That's a company which is valued at $1 billion or more. Am I correct?
Correct.
Okay. Very interesting findings that. And Ian, if I can come to you, I must say I was impressed to see Standard Bank involved in the preparation of this report, or in certainly in the collaboration of it. There is a widespread belief in the crypto space that South African banks are hostile to cryptos. And, you know, you'll probably concede that there's good reason for that, because so many of the banks have pulled away from offering crypto services to crypto exchanges, for example. And Brenton can certainly attest to that. In Standard Bank's case, I take it that's not the case. I mean, Standard Bank is a bit of a standout here.
Yes, I think Standard Bank applies like all the other financial institutions. We're quite heavily regulated and we follow the regulatory rule. And you probably would have seen that the regulators are taking a proactive stance on this in a few African countries, to Brenton's point. But we follow the regulations, but we do believe in learning through doing, and we've experimented with blockchain for quite a few years. And then on the crypto side, we are providing crypto banking services to the exchanges in South Africa, or the crypto asset service providers. But I must say, we always follow the rules, being a regulated institution. So you can learn exactly how blockchain works and what the benefits are. I think for the benefit of our customers and growth in Africa, it's important for us as a bank to understand what those benefits are and how we can optimally utilize this technology, and in future be part of the decentralized economy and the decentralized world.
Brenton, some of the use cases for blockchain include remittances and payments, as I mentioned in the intro. Now, as things stand, using stable coins for trade payments it's almost certainly happening, but it's unregulated at the moment. And for those who don't know, stablecoin is an asset which is backed by, it's a crypto which is backed by a real world asset. So in the case of the one that we've all been reading about in the last few weeks, Terra USD, supposedly backed by the US dollar, but we find out that wasn't the case. Where does your research suggest these use cases are headed, where we're going to be using blockchain and perhaps even stablecoins for a multitude of things that are just not available at the moment?
Well, absolutely. You know, I think particularly with reference to Africa, it's no surprise that we don't enjoy the same level of financial infrastructure and access to financial services and products that, you know, some of our counterparts in you know, more first world type countries would get. And obviously, because of that, you know, the payments and remittance space presents itself as the low-hanging fruit in terms of opportunities for Africa. But I think, as you've said, it's definitely being done, because Africans are very, very intelligent people who, you know, I think we've seen the global adoption rates are exceptionally high in Africa, and these are one of the reasons, because it represents a more efficient and cheaper way to make payments, both, you know, locally, both to make and receive payments from abroad. But the biggest barrier to sort of large scale adoption of things like stable coins, and definitely we don't want the algorithmic kind like we've seen with Terra, but, you know, especially regulated collateralized stable coins, things like USDC, where there's physical dollars in the bank, USDT, BUSD, those instruments really represent a great opportunity. And the biggest barrier or friction to it pretty much powering most of the payments and remittance infrastructure is the lack of regulatory controls, right? Regulators, central banks, they need to know when money flows from one country to another, back into this country. You know, and obviously there's a number of important reasons for this. So I think over the next couple of years, once we see that regulatory framework improve, we'll see the use of things like stable coins for remittances and payments become far, far more ubiquitous across Africa. And I think one of the important things for that to happen is the building blocks need to be in place. So you need local currency on and off ramps in each country. You need sufficient liquidity. And another key standout from the report is that of all the blockchain venture funding raised in Africa in 2021, about 79% of that went towards fintech and exchange businesses, which will form that foundational level and layer that will make it a lot easier for regulated institutions to adopt these solutions. So I think it's a big friction at the moment, but in the near future, when the regulators come on board and the foundational infrastructure is built by these fintech companies and exchanges, it'll become far easier and far more adopted.
Yes, and I see you mentioned in the report the $50 million that was raised by Vela, the crypto exchange based here in South Africa. And it's an extraordinary amount of money for a company that's been around just a few years. You know, you think how companies on the stock exchange, how long before they can raise that kind of capital from traditional investors. It really does make you think what is going on in the space. But Ian, if we can come back to you, I have this idea that banks are just too immersed in their legacy systems, and they're pretty good. But do they recognize the train smash that's headed their way? Crypto enthusiasts are flocking to platforms where annual returns of 20% or more are being offered, and banks are nowhere near offering this kind of enticement. So it's not always a good idea to throw a lot of money at these potentially risky platforms. Terra USD, the one that we just mentioned, is a case in point. They were offering 20%. That's all gone. But, you know, if you look at blockchain impacting banking in South Africa, what are we likely to see the first applications coming through? What's it going to look like? How's it going to change our banking experience?
Well, I think to your point, crypto is growing exponentially. And to Brenton's point, the fintechs, where the actual money is going, is to the fintechs or crypto asset service providers. But banks like us, we all recognize the potential and we can see the returns. But with that comes volatility and lots of risk, as you mentioned. So I think it's quite important to understand the underlying risks in that world. But I think in the future, and what's evolving is that I think the bridge between the old and the new is going to be quite important. If you think about onboarding capabilities that banks provide, banks do provide trust. And I think from a regulatory perspective, as soon as regulations are being finalized and reporting and tracking, I think this is going to become more ubiquitous. But I still think if you look at the US dollar coins, globally, what's happening, there is a trust function that's provided by banks where they're actually holding that collateral on behalf, and that collateral is audited. The examples that you mentioned, you must be 100% sure what's actually backing the asset and that there's sufficient collateral. And I think if that trust and that, embedded validations are included, so the best of both worlds, the best of a centralized and the best of a decentralized world are combined, I think then you're going to start seeing cross-border transactions and lots of other payments being done at a fraction of the cost of what it's being done at today. So I think that's on the cost. Yeah, but I wouldn't neglect the regulatory. Regulation still is vital. We've seen it now. Globally proven, I think without regulations, growth is not going to be as significant as it's going to be with regulatory support.
Yeah. There are one of the use cases that you do mention in the report, and I find this a bit of a fascinating subject, is trade payments. So if you're importing goods from Zimbabwe, could you actually pay in stablecoin? Because that is completely unregulated. It goes outside of the central bank controls that you have in place. It is happening. We know that there are people who are actually buying goods from China. I certainly have heard of it. paying with Rand stablecoins. So this kind of thing is going on, and does it undermine, you know, the monetary regimes that you have in these countries? Does it undermine the national sovereignty? What do you think about that, Brenton?
Well, I think, you know, just furthering to Ian's point is the real key that unlocks this exponential growth of the technology and the opportunities it can provide is that regulatory piece of the puzzle that's missing. And in Africa in general, at least to my understanding, we tend to wait for a lot of the, you know, for lack of a better term, more advanced economies who have the resources and infrastructure to research these things a little bit deeper, to, you know, put out their test cases, put out regulatory frameworks, do the experimentations. And then, you know, once they've done that and released a framework that tends to work, we then adopt that. And I think if we look globally, I mean, even with what's going on right now, I mean, at the World Economic Forum, where the rest of my team is at the moment, a large component of that is blockchain, stable coins, regulating the sector. I think a week or two ago, the president of El Salvador invited 44 emerging market economies to El Salvador, to what they call Bitcoin Beach, to discuss, you know, obviously adopting it as legal tender and all the other surrounding benefits. And I think as we see one of the global leaders adopt a sort of blanket framework, we'll start to see a lot more of that adoption take place in Africa. And to cut back to actual numbers, in Africa's 54 countries at the moment, only about 6 have a legal status that is approved. So crypto is only legal in 6 out of 54 countries, roughly 11%. 27 of them have an implicit ban because of exactly what you just described, Kieran. It's understandable from a regulator's perspective is how do we control where this money is flowing, who this money is flowing to, if people are paying taxes, you know, if there's terrorist financing. And what this framework is hopefully going to help us to understand, further to Ian's point, is how do we control those flows of money, both within the country and outside the border? How do we make sure bad things are not happening with those flows? And I think we're very close to seeing a global superpower, the likes of an EU or a US, adopt a sort of blanket framework that answers these big questions. And when we see that, I think the 27 countries that have an implicit ban because they can't answer all of these questions at the moment will have a much better view on how to deal with these things. And they'll change from the implicit ban status to the legal status. So I'm hoping that, you know, we'll see that number move from 6 to hopefully closer to 27 over the next roughly 12 to 24 months. And that will allow a lot of this potential to be unlocked. You know, at that stage, players like Standard Bank can start using stable coins for remittance without the end user ever having to even see the word blockchain. And that's when the real value is created, in my opinion.
Right. And of course, the Central African Republic recently authorized Bitcoin as legal tender as well. I don't know if that's earth-shattering news or not. I had to look it up. It's a country of 5 million people, apparently. But I do think it's pretty revolutionary for an African country to do that. And just looking through the reports, I do see South Africa scoring quite well in terms of its embrace of cryptos and the development of CBDCs or central bank digital currencies. Mauritius does well as well. Possibly Nigeria, as far as CBDCs are concerned, but they're not too friendly towards cryptos of the private nature. Kenya, too, fairly tolerant about cryptos, but one gets a sense that the regulators are a bit frozen in the headlights about all of this. They don't quite know what to do or how to regulate this market. For example, how do you define a stablecoin? And then what regulations apply to that stablecoin if you're going to be able to do trade payments with it? As I mentioned earlier, and does that undermine your legal tender laws and all that sort of thing? Is that a fair assessment of the state of things? You mentioned, what was it, 6 countries in Africa with some form of regulation. You want to see that go to about 27, which would be about halfway in the next year or two. Is that right, Brenton?
Correct. You know, and I think there are a number of big sort of legacy players that are going to play an important role in that. Standard Bank obviously being one. You know, Africa's largest bank. They've obviously got the golden thread, I think, that can, you know, create the bonds between these countries, to understand these frameworks and adopt these frameworks that I've been, that I just spoke about. And also organizations like, BRI, the Blockchain Research Institute, who Standard Bank have partnered with as well. You know, I think it's going to be up to the private sector a lot to drive or lead these engagements to really unlock this potential. But Ian, I know that you guys are doing a lot in this space. Is there anything that you want to add to that?
Yes, I think what's very important, why we're struggling, I think the regulation is only focused on those six countries, but I think education and understanding is a critical point. A lot of us focus on education always, but it doesn't mean that people actually understand. And I think this reaction to crypto is based on news and what's happening. People can't really, and regulators don't see the benefit. They see cash flowing out. They see their own fiat being undermined. And I think if you really implement good governance blockchain solutions, then it can actually bring a lot of transparency and it can facilitate regulation and monetary policy. So I think it's all about education and having trusted participants initially to bridge the gap between the old and the new world. And I think that could speed up the regulatory environment as well.
Ian, just staying with you, I think one of the things that struck me when I was reading this report, and you do kind of hint at it here and there, is the potential for blockchain technology to do for Africa's financial services, and even more than that, for its overall prosperity and economic development. The blockchain will have the same impact, or has the potential to have the same impact on that, as cell phones did for communication. I mean, if you go anywhere in Africa, even to the remotest parts of DRC, Congo, or Ghana, West Africa, pretty much everybody these days has got a smartphone, which means that not only can they make calls, but they can access data from all sorts of things. So, you know, if you're in the cocoa trade, you know, you're a cocoa farmer in Ghana, you know what the price is for cocoa. Nobody's going to fool you and pretend, you know, that because you're out in the sticks, you don't know. Do you see that? What was the surprises for you in this research? And was that something that you actually saw, that this does have the potential to accelerate Africa's development?
Yes. Well, firstly, let me just tell you what the surprises are. One of the surprises was that South Africa didn't, I think they came in fourth when receiving some of these new funding. I think Nigeria was leading, and then Seychelles and Kenya and South Africa, which normally there's a lot of activity. I realized in this report that we're actually not leading in this space across Africa. And that gives you another indication that there is large potential across Africa, but even in South Africa, where there's not a lot of funding happening at the moment. Compared, you mentioned Valor, but I mean, in the bigger scheme of things, the other countries are leading because people see the opportunity to actually utilize blockchain to bring governance, to bring transparency, and actually to facilitate lowering barriers to entry of various blockchain use cases. In the bank, we're participating on use cases where we are growing food, and it brings dignity to people, because if you think about transparent, immutable ledger, that facilitate programmable money, for instance, it makes it ensuring that the right person gets what is actually due to them without having to fight for it or being bullied out of it. So there are multiple opportunities across Africa, and I think the combination of crypto, stablecoins, tokenization, the carbon market, I see potential in all those, and those are the things that's actually happening on the ground. So we're quite connected across Africa, as Brenton mentioned, through the BRI Africa as well, where we do a lot of, or are busy doing a lot of research to facilitate learning, awareness, an actual application and execution for communities to utilize the technology to improve their lives. So now I see a lot of opportunities, but it was a surprise to me, given the activity and the people that contact and connect with me in South Africa, that our portion of the funding is so small compared to the other countries.
Indeed. Brenton, the space is clearly growing at an unbelievably fast rate. You've mentioned some of these figures for growth, and people, you know, when the first time they hear about cryptos, and, you know, it's not really happening unless it's 1,000% up, right? They may have to rethink that in light of what's happened in the last few weeks in the crypto market. But give us some of the predictions based on this research that's just been done in the African Blockchain Report. What are your predictions for the next 12, 24 months?
Well, like you said, Jaron, the space moves at lightning speed. And I think 12 to 24 months out, my first prediction is something would have happened or been created and none of us would have predicted. But, you know, coming back down to, I think where the evidence and the data is leading us is, I think within the next 12 to 24 months, we definitely see a much clearer regulatory regime being introduced across specific trade blocks or regional blocks in Africa. And that would, you know, like I said, take us from six countries where it's legal, hopefully to a region of 20 to 30. And then I think that also opens the opportunity for a lot of very interesting inter-African partnerships and proof of concepts. So that's one. Two, I think we will definitely see the emergence of Africa's first blockchain unicorn. You know, Africa is still generally young in terms of producing these billion-dollar companies, like you mentioned. And, you know, I think there are only roughly six African unicorns in total. Five of them are fintech companies. None of them are blockchain companies. So I definitely think we start sprouting one or two unicorns in the next year or so. And then finally, I think at least one of Africa's leading companies will start utilizing this technology in a very meaningful way. So, you know, very consumer facing or, like I said, powering trade payments or something to that effect that really has a significant benefit to the African continent in some way. So I think those are probably the three top predictions from my side.
Fantastic. Ian, same question to you. Give us your predictions for the next 12 to 24 months.
Yes, I cannot. The first one is the regulatory environment is going to be more certain, and there's going to be a lot of changes coming through, which I think will be an opportunity. Secondly, I think African stablecoins is something that's going to start. I know you talk about a Czarcoin, but I think more from a regulatory perspective, getting stablecoins that fiat-backed that can facilitate cross-border trades in a regulated kind of way. Also, CBDCs, I think, is going to pick up over the next 12 to 24 months, and the integration between that and tokenized financial instruments will probably move quicker, because that infrastructure, that core infrastructure, is key for any blockchain ecosystem from a Web3 payment perspective to facilitate this regulated cross-border trade. I also think that the use of non-fungible tokens and educational type blockchains is going to start coming to the fore. So more use cases, more live blockchains that actually deliver value that's tracked and traced and that makes a difference in people's lives.
I guess it's fair to say, in summing up, that both you, Brenton, and you, Ian, you do see this technology having quite a revolutionary effect in the next 2 years. We're not talking here very far from now. I mean, 2 years from now, if we were able to be able to do trade transactions using stable coins, that in itself would be revolutionary. If we had regulations which would govern what is a crypto, defines it accurately, and what are the limits of a crypto and what you can do with it, I think that would be pretty revolutionary as well. And these other use cases like payments, cross-border remittances, trade, as we've already mentioned, and a host of other things, education, blockchain, Web3, all of these new evolutions of technology are just really now only beginning to accelerate because you've now got a financial platform off which they can launch. Would that be a correct summary there? Ian, would you agree with that? Brenton?
Yes.
Absolutely, absolutely agree. I think we're on the cusp of something very special here.
Lovely. Well, I want to thank you both for coming on to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. It's been a fantastic discussion. Well done on the research. It's very much needed. And I really hope that this is going to become an annual thing because it does keep us our fingers on the pulse of what's actually happening in terms of blockchain development around the continent. So fantastic work to both of you. And thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having us as usual, Kieran. And if any of your users want to download the report, they can find it at CVVC.com. We've got a little report tab, and the first report there will be the African blockchain report.
Great. Thank you so much, Brenton. Thanks, Ian.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.